Thank you, everybody, for coming. When everybody's ready, everybody's welcome to come towards the front. Quick announcement, the Caesar salad, I apologize for not announcing beforehand, the Caesar salad had Parmesan on it, so you can ask your local Orthodox rabbi about what to do about that now. For the question-answer session, there were some questions that were sent in. I'm going to address each one to one of the Rosh Yeshiva, but then the other Rosh Yeshiva can respond as desired. So first question I'm going to post to Rabbi Luban Shlita. What's the correct hashkafa with exposing my kids to things that aren't Torahdik? Clean secular books, clean videos, etc.
Right. Okay, thank you. All right, in almost any question, the answer is, it depends. And what always happens, I was just thinking here, that when we would talk hashgafa, I always know that let's say you tell people that there are some guys who should go to college because they, you know, it's important to get a profession, and some guys that they don't need it. And you always had that the guys that don't need it are the ones that hear the hashgafa, you should go to college. And the guys that should be going to college are the ones that hear the hashkafa that you shouldn't go. So I'm almost guaranteed that everyone's going to get the wrong message. What do you do with your kids? It depends on your kids. You know, the different kids are different. Obviously, if we could live in a world where we don't have to expose our kids to anything that's not Torahdik, that would be great. That would be wonderful. Great. But regretfully, depending, it's very difficult because our kids have friends and they know about these things. And if they don't get it, if we don't expose them, sometimes they'll be exposed in a worse way. So you have to know your situation. You have to know what your kids will be ready. Be, you know, if your kids feel deprived, then that's the worst thing. So not giving your kids anything, and then they feel deprived, and then they go over to their friend's house and watch all kinds of movies, whatever, that aren't being censored by the family, is much worse than if you do it yourself. But, so the answer is, the answer I would say is, you have to know your children. If your children are not feeling deprived and you can do it, then you're obviously, the more you can minimize it, the better. There are things that are completely, I think clean secular books, I don't know if there's any problem really, if it's really a clean secular book, I don't know. Clean videos is also not such a problem, but its problem is that it's usin amshuche to other things. You know, I'm not sure what a clean secular book means. I don't know what age we're talking about, you know. But you have to know, you have to be smart, you have to know what your kids need, and when your kids will feel, it's not realistic to expect our kids to sit and learn all day at a young age. They need some kind of kosher distractions, and regretfully, there aren't that many kosher distractions. So if you have a kosher distraction and you can supervise it and done in a clean, in a kosher way, it's usually not so bad, but it depends, again, how much they need. If they don't need at all, then you minimize it. I see my son here, so I'll be made our MS, that when we came from Israel, first of all, in Israel, obviously there's no movies, but people actually would bring computers to their houses, and people would show Home Alone was the most popular movie in Israel in the film world. And they would watch it, Ben Azmanim, in all the frum homes. And my wife met one of our neighbors at about 2 o'clock in the morning, carrying an air conditioner box up to his apartment, which meant there was a television in there, and because that's what they were doing. And when we came to Florida, so we decided, one Chalamoi, I actually took the kids to a drive-in theater to see a very clean movie that the kids found very boring. But I wanted them to know what a theater was. They want to see a movie, so I didn't want to go into a movie house. So we went to a drive-in. We sat in our car, and we saw some movie about football. I don't know what it was about, but something And, you know, I think we were Yahtzee. I hope we were Yahtzee, you know, that they didn't feel deprived. Okay, I hope that answered the question. Yes, please.
So, I don't know if everybody, Chate, is Ray Chate right outside? So, I was at a Torah Masorah convention. Rabbi Chate, I tell you one story about you. I was at a Torah Masorah convention, and they had a high school session for out of town and the high school session for Lakewood and Muncie. And Rabbi Chate called me over and he says, Mordechai, I dare you to go into that session and last longer than 5 minutes. So I went into the session and someone got up and asked Revelia Brudny, Shlita, I'm a Manal of Masifta in Lakewood, and we want to provide clean reading material for the Bachrim in the dormitory. Is the Reshiva think it's okay that we could just provide clean reading material? So he looked at them like they were crazy, like, what's your question? Like, what are you talking about? If it's clean, what are you talking about? So I thought the Manal sort of fumfered. He got a little like froze. And he said, no, I mean clean things like the Yated and Amudia is okay. So I was saying, I'm laughing so hard. Like, that's what they come up with. Are you allowed to read the Yated Naman? And Rabbi Elia Brudny Shlita says, the Yated Naman? I would never allow the Yated Naman. I said, my gosh, right? Jake was right. It lasts 1 minute. But he just, you should know, in Lakewood, Rabbi Elia Brudny thought that was extreme. They're going to go to Olfa Schmutz with all the politics. What do they need that stuff for? So, as Rabbi Lubman said, it depends where you're asking. You know, in our dormitories, we allow Yated Naman.
Okay, I have to go. Can I just add one more thing to both sides? As Rabbi Lubman mentioned, I'm not sure what the word clean means. You know, are there such clean things as clean books? Good Shaila. But I would just tend to caution everybody. Clean does not just mean, you know, whether dirty pictures or inappropriate, you know, discussions about all the preachers and everything else. I think clean also means what the secular world considers clean is not what we consider clean. In other words, I saw someplace, I forgot which who it was that one Gadol said recently, but, you know, the hashkafas and the society that discusses, you know, they have a different set of values, l'mushal. If there's something in the book which talks about, you know, this guy's jealous of him, he's making so much money, and he has a bigger chandelier and all that, that's also not so kosher. You know, is it as terrible as other things? No. But to read a book which resonates and talks about the hashkafas which the Goy Shevelt is so steeped in, and which we believe is antithetical to our Mesorah, whether it's a kinnah or a jealousy or a gaiva, you know, that's what the books are all about. You know, I always tell a story that we used to have an executive director working for us whose name was, I can't remember this in a second, but his name was, I don't remember anymore, I'm sorry. But, who? Sandy Weber, yes. Thank you, Rabbi Yezer. Goes back about 20 years. He comes to my office one time. He says, Rabbi, I love working here. I said, why? And I knew that he's not making that much money. No big covet. Like, what's he doing? Why is he so excited? So I said, why are you so excited? Why do you love working here? He tells me, he was about 50, 55. He says, I've been around a lot. I've had my own businesses. I worked with people. I think he made a magazine one time, a kosher magazine. I think it was a catering one, something, all different things. Wherever you go, in every single business, he says, all you find is it's doggy-doggy. The goal is to become the CEO. That's the goal. How you get there doesn't make any difference. You step on the guy next to you, blame him, it's his fault, insult him. They don't care, right? That's the goyish hashkafa. He didn't say that, but that's, and he said he couldn't handle it. It was like, you know, everyone, you know, if someone made a mistake, it's his fault. If something good happened, I get credit for it. That's how it is. He said, here in the yeshiva, he said, it's a whole different ball game. People are here, the rabbeim, the teachers are here because they care, they're idealistic, they have a goal, they're selfless, not selfish, selfless, and they care to mold children to B'nai Torah. That's a whole different hashkafa that you see in the Velt. So something could be kosher because it doesn't talk about who knows what, but it's still half treif because it illustrates the hashkafas that the Velt promulgates. That's it enough.
You can hold on to that one. just to explain, Rabbi Lubin left to go to a wedding of a Talmud. He really wanted to stay longer, but... okay, next question. Rabbi Naiman Shlita, I moved to a new community. How do I choose a Rav? Do I ask my shaylas to my previous Rav until I'm comfortable asking someone in my new community? How important is it to have a local Rav? And the last part, is it better to daven in a yeshiva or a shul? Seems to really be a separate question, but to focus on the aspect of having a Rav.
Wow, this is a tough one. Listen, the answer in general is obviously you have to have a Rav. That's not part of the shaila, right? You have to have a Rav, whoever he is. Now, obviously, it's definitely better to have a Rav who's local. You know, it doesn't work as well to have to call him long distance. You know, you don't feel like getting on the phone. You can't reach him. It's not as good. No shaila about it, in my humble opinion. You have to have a Rav. Now, you come from someplace else. You have a different Rav. You stay with that Rav as long until you feel comfortable that this new Rav is someone you can relate to, someone that you trust in terms of his Das Torah, in terms of halacha, in terms of attitudes. That's very crucial. That's very important. But that takes a while. You can't say, well, flip the switch, and all of a sudden, I'll go to that new Rav. Maybe you won't like him in 2 months because he has different values, different hashkafas, different approaches, especially if you're in Chavos Chaim. It's a good chance that you might have a lot of differences, right? So you have to be careful. It's definitely much better if you can go get the local Rav. There's no question about it. And leave go doesn't mean you let go totally of your old Rav. You know, if you're Machshavim, he's a big person, so that kesher should never be let go of. But it's just practical from a perspective, to go ahead and develop the connection with the local Rav. In terms of where to daven, that's a good question. I assume it depends who you are. You have to know yourself. The Rashiv always talked about being in the community, being in the shul, the mashpia, to be a role model. I assume the shul needs you more than the yeshiva does. On the other hand, if you're someone who feels, you know, you're not that advanced, then you went to yeshiva 2 years, 1 year, 2 years, not so much, and I need the hashpah of the yeshiva on me, and I can't afford to go and daven in the shul, so daven in the yeshiva. But so I think it depends how confident you are in your own ability to survive outside the yeshiva world, outside the yeshiva environment, and therefore, if you could, you go to the shul, to mashpia. If you feel you can't, you're not ready for it, so you stay put in the yeshiva, you go to the yeshiva there. Rabbi Palger, I'm sure, wants to comment on this. You're always welcome, Rabbi Palger. He's a good guy.
So Rabbi Naiman was saying, I think that if you're really stronger, then go to the shul because you have a hashpa. And if you don't think you're that type, then you're not going to have a hashpa anyway in the shul, you go to yeshiva. Which I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying another svara. So there are a lot of svaras for you. There's the question, one of the alumni are asking this question for themselves, but for your children need a Rav. So you also have to know your kids. It's not so pashut to daven in yeshiva. I'm just saying, because who do your kids see as their Rav? I try very hard, but I'm not always so successful. But anyone I see in yeshiva with their kids, I always go over and try and say hello because they're davening yeshiva, so the kids need to see a Rav. But I don't know if they view the Rebbeim. There are a lot of Rebbeim here. Like, we have only Rebbeim. You come to yeshiva, it's like 25 Rebbeim. So, like, who's the Rav? Who's the rabbi? We're all the balabatim, you know. So I don't know how the kid views it. But it's very important to take your kids to a shul where they're going to have a Rav. In a shul, there's one rabbi. No one messes with the Rav. And they know, and they, you know, the Rav will carve them. Doesn't mean you can never daven yeshiva, but you have to know yourself in that also. Your kids need a Rav. So if when you come to yeshiva, you think they're going to get that feeling of the yeshiva's their Rav, that's not so easy to do. But if you think you can make it like the yeshiva's their Rav, I saw one of the new bar mitzvah boys was davening here the other night. It was at 10:30 at night. So I turned to his father with him there. I said, can't you find him an earlier minion? You know, so the kid says, I don't want to daven another minion. He wants to daven at the 10:30 marv because he loves the base guys. So yeah, if that's what your kid, he's using the yeshiva as his rav, he wants to daven at 10:30 minion, so fine. There's advantage to that. Okay, that may I give Hector, that kid could daven yeshiva, but most kids just, the whole yeshiva thing, they're just running around and they don't have anyone to be madrich them. In that case, maybe it's better go to a shul at least some of the time.
Okay. Question number three for Rabbi Palgan Shlita. It's a long-winded question, but the basic question is, how important is homework for kids? Is it different depending on their age, Kodesh versus Chol, etc.? And I guess you could put in there all the fights that might come along with it was also part of the question.
Well, that was the hardest question on this page. I was hoping our Lubin went into that one. I mean, having been a principal, I get in big fat trouble with this. But, you know, homework, that's the school's problem. You know, you fight with your kid over homework. You have to do your due diligence. Really, the basic thing is that let the school deal with the homework. Let them make it exciting. Let them make their contest. You know, you're going to fight with your kid over homework. There's going to be very little left. I agree with the person asking the question. Well, the problems. I think you have to do your due diligence as a parent to support the school. Try and make it fun. Don't do it. If you could avoid doing it yourself, get one of these Beisakov girls to come over and do the homework. Make it fun. Make an incentive. I don't know. Do pizza once a week if they do the homework. I don't know. Try and make it good, but you're going to fight with your kid over homework. If the child has a real deficiency in something in early intervention, you know, language or math, you got to find a way to help the child. But just for the sake of doing the teacher's homework, you know, I mean, yeah, we got some kids in here. I get in big fat trouble. I see Chaim Hirsch here. You know, the homework for 45 minutes is interminable. That's like grounds for, you know, consider, go have an appointment with the principal. 45 minutes is a lot of time. You know, the school should be, and most of my, you know, I heard from many teachers, they give homework, maybe the principal makes them give the homework, but many teachers don't really care that much. If the parent will contact the teacher and say, my kid's having such a hard time, and reach out to the teacher, let them know, I'll have my child could do a little bit, is okay if he just does three examples, or six examples, and, you know, as a Rebbe, I don't think I ever gave homework one day in my life. You know, give homework. Sometimes there's a bechina, there's a project. If the homework is busy work, it's bechal making the kid crazy. If it's really, really, really important, you know, don't assume that you know everything why they give the homework. Go call the teacher. Don't be scared that they'll think that you're a crackpot and just complaining. Find out from the teacher what it is they want to get out of homework because my kid doesn't want to do it. You have any suggestions? No. And if it's a yes or no question, no, don't fight with your kid over homework. But there are details you can do to help.
I don't want to address the overall question of homework, yes or no. That's not my expertise so much. And it's a tough shout. Rabbi Palgan has a lot more experience than I do. But I think it's important to mention one point. And that is, I don't want to sound like a principal either, but I probably will. I think whatever it is, you have to make sure that you don't say anything negative about the homework or the teacher or the school to your children. They have to always know, excuse my expression, doesn't sound so good these days, but the school is always right. Now, if you have a problem with the homework, they talk to the teachers, right? Palgan said, you know, convince the teacher, but you have to make sure the kid has faith and respect and recognition that there's something special about the Rebbe, about the secular teacher, about the principal. That line can never be crossed. You can't go ahead and say, listen, this homework is ridiculous. You don't have to do it, Baruch. No, you don't have to do it. It's too much. The Rebbe's giving you too much. That's no good. Because even if you write that time, but it affects everything else that the Rebbe tells you or the principal does, and it affects his respect and doesn't want to listen to the rules, it's a rule, breaking rule, something like that. I don't know if it's a expression like that, no? That's very important to keep in mind. So it could be the Rebbe's wrong. So it's your job as a parent to call the teacher, call the Rebbe, and say, listen, I can't do it. Either knock it out for the whole school, for the whole class, or just my son needs an exception, but he can't do it. Then deal with the Rebbe and the school and the principal. But if the Rebbe and the principal does give homework, you have to support the school. Otherwise, you're totally lost. You've got to be the kid for the future reference.
Okay, Rabbi Naiman Shlita. How do I decide how to give tzedakah? Is it better to give smaller amount to more people or organizations or larger amount to fewer? Do yeshivos deserve a certain percentage of my tzedakah giving, etc.?
This is a tough question for an army to answer.
The truth is, it's so tough. See, most of it is really halachic shaila, and I'm not opposed, I can't answer that question. Chazal, I think we do know, say that you should give to more places rather than one place all the money. That's halacha. Where that applies or how much it applies, I cannot tell you. I don't know. I assume it doesn't mean all give a million places 5 cents. I don't think it means that. What the balance? I don't know. I'm not a postie. I can't tell you. But my kids always ask me, where should I give my sucker money to? What's the priority? Give me, where should I do it? Should I give it to your yeshiva, Tati, So I tell them, I think it's important. There's Hilchas Hakaras HaTov. Someone, I think my granddaughter just asked me that she's working now. She has a job as a teacher assistant, I think it is, in New York someplace. And I told her, I said, first of all, give to the school that you went to. That's probably the top priority, okay? She goes, went to some Beis Yaakov, wherever it was in New York. That's one priority. Maybe give I didn't give her numbers, but that's the highest percentage, in terms of that's your achrayus, hakaras hatov, that you can give to your parents' alma mater or your parents' school, right? But there's hilchas hakaras hatov. So you have to give. I personally try to give. I give to Torah Semes, I think first and foremost. I give to Chavos Chaim. That's where I came from. Whatever I am is because of Chavos Chaim. I give to Beis Yaakov. My daughters went there. And I give to Torah Semes, not just because of myself, because my kids went here. So I think it's all totally, obviously you give some stuff to other places also and other people. Aniyim has to be part of the cheshbon. Exactly the percentage I cannot tell you. I'm not a posek, but I think that's the overall criteria is Hilchas HaKaras HaTov. That's your greater achrayas. You give to your family, you give to your children, whatever family needs, that's also big achrayas. But overall, there's Hilchas HaKaras HaTov.
Okay, Rabbi Palgan Shlita. I'd like to stay more in touch with my Yeshiva Toras Chaim Rabbeim, but I know they're busy, so I don't want to be a bother. Any advice for me?
Yeah, I wrote down on my answer to this question. This is a ridiculous question. The person's trying to get out of contacting his Rebbe and wants to blame it on the Rebbeim because they're too busy. My cell phone is 305-283-5239. Rabbi Nyman's would gladly accept all your calls. 305-720-5395. I want to tell you, I call Ray Nyman dozens of times over 25 years. Every single time I call him, he always answers, hello, how are you? How are things? Like, it's even like call him like 12 o'clock at night. He's so excited. I call him on Erev Shabbos, like 10 minutes before Lech Benching. How are you? Ray Nyman will take every one of your calls. Rabbi Luban, 305-494-2734. Rabbi Luban, we go to all these meetings. We're meeting with the biggest donors. And if he gets a phone call from a Talmud, he says, I'm sorry, I have a phone call. And he walks out and he takes the call. Every one of us will take every phone call from all alumni. That would be priority for us, the biggest nachas, to stay in touch with you. So whoever thinks that we're a bother, we're too busy, we're not too busy, or it's not a bother, I'm sorry, I can't take away your guilt. I just gave out the phone numbers. I'm sure I did it with Rishus, Rabbi Nyman, and Rabbi Luban. Rabbi Nyman could rebut me if he wants.
I second the motion.
Okay. Rabbi Nyman Shlita. A little off script here, because Rabbi Luban is not here to take some of the questions. But how bidyavid is it to learn Daf Yomi? I remember hearing something about the Reshiva Zatzal not being a fan of it.
You remember hearing something about it? That's the best
thing
to say. Wow.
I didn't write the question.
This guy went to yeshiva, this Talmud of ours?
Apparently, he must have.
He remembers hearing something about it. Okay. The yeshiva was obviously, I think it's Pashut, not a very big fan of it. Four, a regular yeshiva guy in the yeshiva, for sure. No Shaila, no Daf Yomi. Focus on the Iyun Seder, the Bekiya Seder. I don't think I'm saying Chedushim to anybody here if you're a Chavos Chaim guy. Even most yeshivas, most yeshivas are not for it. Not pro with the Gabi guys in the yeshiva. That's pretty pushy, I think, from what I understand. The question is, once you leave the yeshiva, so I think the yeshiva would say that, he used to always tell us, if you have an hour to learn, you divide it up, one-third in Iyun, one-third Bekiyas, one-third Halacha, and then somehow you get Musa Seder also. They used to ask some Rebbe, if you have 20 minutes each, how do you do four times? And you find the time, a little more time someplace else, grab some time in the morning, at night, do it. But that's what you have to do. He never was a big fan of Daf Yom. If you have more time to learn Be'iyun, so you definitely do Be'iyun. I remember hearing, I think my father told over a Shaila that the Reshiva Paskin, someone from out there in the ranks called up the Shaila with the Reshiva with Shaila. I think it was a brother in a certain community. And he asked the reshiva, I can give a shir. I can give one or two types of shir, only one shir. Either shir in Bikiyas, or daf, I think it was a daf yomi shir, and I'll get 50 people in my shul, I think it was, to come. Or I can give an Ion Seder shir, you know, same hour, and I'll get 10 people to come. I think those are numbers that were mentioned in the Shaila. What should I do? So what did Rashiva answer? Give the shir of Ion, 10 people. You know, so that was much more intense, much more effective, and much more, you know, inspirational learning. On the other hand, the Rashi would definitely hold, I think, I'm not sure if I heard it personally, but the Rashi would say, in my opinion, that if it's a matter of, you know, you're not learning so much, you want to grab on to a shir that's being given, and otherwise you won't go to a shir, it'll be hard to get to a shir, or the shir is no Ian shir, or you're not motivated to do that. Of course, daf yomi is very, very important and very beneficial to a person who's not going to be into learning. Yeah, I think he would say it's a lot better than nothing. But I heard something, someone told me there's a big new movement for Amud Yomi now. I think it's starting to make a CM. I heard something about it. There's some movement out there. And that's obviously, the Rashiva's eyes, much, much better. You know, you don't have to go so fast. You know, I mean, listen, you know, the primary beneficiary of Daf Yomi is the person who's Magid Shir. The other ones, you know, they go, they hear. Shem Shammai, I'm not criticizing them, but Ian Seder or slower Bikiya Seder is much more valuable.
Yeah, I would just add that I know many of our alumni I've spoken to who said that they fell out of learning and Daf Yomi got them back into learning. So you have to know if Daf Yomi will connect you, because you have everyone's, all your friends are in it, and there's all these, you know, big shiurim going on. People have, like, you know, T-shirts. I'm in this thing, and so it can almost get people into it. So that's that. You have to realize that. I think people should not use the Rosh Hashiva's hashkafa to stop themselves from doing Daf Yomi. Obviously, someone's in yeshiva and have a whole 3-hour Ian Seder. Okay, but if you're not at that level, don't be scared to do Daf Yomi. I don't think anyone in yeshiva, myself or Rabbi Naaman, would look down at anyone who's doing Daf Yomi. If I care, we'd be very proud that someone's getting up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning to learn Daf Yomi. And just know that doesn't stop there. There's more that you could do. You know, it can't just be Daf Yomi. As somebody said, learn Daf Yomi and you'll know Shas. You'll finish Shas before you know it.
Again, Rabosai, I agree with Rabbi Palgan 100%. Shkayach Rabbi Palgan.
Okay, Rabbi Osei, I think we're going to stop here. We'll have a short 5-minute break. The askar for Rabbi Sharfman will Mirtz Hashem start in 5 minutes. In here, in the auditorium.
Thank you.